Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
John Feinstein joins us each and every Monday as we review the big national headlines, preview what's to come in the upcoming week. John, how are you?
I'm well, Jonathan. How are you guys?
We're doing well. We were discussing earlier, we'll get your take now. Does it matter for college football if Clemson wins tonight? Does it matter who actually hoists the trophy in the grand scheme of things?
Very good question. I guess I've never thought about it, to be honest. I think it matters in the sense that it prevents Nick Saban from adding to his already remarkable legacy, and it puts Dabo Sweeney into a relatively small group of coaches who've won two national titles, and Dabo's still a young coach. I mean, you got to assume he's going to have more shots at this, whether they win tonight or not, because he's established his program as one of the two elite programs at the moment in college football. So I think it matters in terms of legacy for both coaches. I also honestly believe, I'll be curious to see what the TV ratings will be tonight, because I think I look at it as it ought to be a great game, because these are clearly the two best teams, and because they've met the last three seasons prior to this one in postseason play. I think though there is some Alabama Clemson fatigue that a lot of people are going to say, you know what, I don't really care which team wins, and they may start out watching. And if the game's close, they'll continue to watch. But if it gets out of hand in either direction, I think you'll see a lot of quick turnoffs.
John, there's also a regionality issue with this, with Alabama, Georgia a year ago, Alabama, Clemson the years before that, now Alabama, Clemson again. And I get that from a national perspective. I guess my question is that the fault of the NCAA or the selection committee, or is it the fault of every other region in America that simply can't get up to the standards that Alabama and Clemson have set?
It's the latter, Chad. I mean, you know me. I'm glad to blame the committees, whether in football or basketball, for the kidnapping of the Lindbergh baby. I cut them no slack. But it is certainly not their fault that Alabama and Clemson have been so dominant in most of the 5 years since the playoff was established. Alabama was certainly a great team long before the playoff was established. Clemson has really come into its own since the establishment of the playoff. It's timing, not the creation of the playoff. But I do think, yes, the Big Ten casts a long shadow, at least in part, partly because of the tradition, partly because Jim Delaney wields so much power, but it's really been a one-team conference the last few years. I mean, Michigan fans may say, "Oh, we've been really good." Well, no, they haven't been that good. They've been a good Gator Bowl team, basically. Pac-12 is a disaster right now, and the ACC is a one-team league. It was a two-team league until Florida State fell, but the ACC is a one-team league. So that leaves Clemson from the ACC, and it leaves the SEC, and they have been dominant. But that is certainly not the fault of the committee. That's the strength of the SEC, which you have to give them credit for, and it's the fact that the other conferences have not been able to live up to that strength for the most part.
John Feinstein with us. John, will you be watching to see the attendance tonight at Levi Stadium?
Well, I think everybody will watch. I think they'll probably be out on the – Bill Hancock may be out on the sidewalk outside the stadium handing out tickets before kickoff to try to fill the stadium. I mean, we've all seen the stories about – how many tickets are out there and how the prices have been slashed. And you could basically, it's sort of like a ticket for the NFL team here in Washington. A friend of mine who's a columnist for the Washington Post went to a game last season and got two good seats in return for, I think, two packages of Hostess Twinkies and a Coke. And it might be somewhat like that at about 4:55 Pacific Coast time tonight. out there in Santa Clara. And, you know, the reasons for that are obvious. You're asking fan bases that have traveled a lot in the last few years because of their success to go coast to coast. The prices in San Francisco in hotels and getting around are as high as anywhere in the country. Santa Clara, if people don't know, is probably a solid hour drive from downtown San Francisco if you're trying to get to a 5 o'clock kickoff or 5:20 kickoff, whatever it is. So there are a lot of reasons why there are so many tickets available tonight, and certainly we'll all pay attention to it. But here's the thing, Jonathan. The powers that be don't care. I mean, sure, they'd like to sell out. They'd like to gouge tickets as much as they can. But they make their money on the TV deal. It's a lot like the NFL where, you know, again, people here in Washington are saying, oh, Dan Snyder must be so upset because nobody's coming to their games or because visiting fans are buying all the tickets. A, he doesn't care who buys the tickets. And B, like every other NFL owner, he makes 70% of his money off of TV revenue.
Yeah, but, there's a part of me that believes that they want their big event to feel like a big event.
Oh, sure they do.
Moment,
no,
right?
That's what I said. Of course they'd like to have it sold out, and, you know, they're copying the Super Bowl with an extended halftime show, which will just be delightful here on the East Coast, so we can make sure the game doesn't end till after midnight. Yes, they want a big game feel to it, and there's no doubt about that, and attendance is certainly a factor in that. But I'm talking long term, it won't affect their finances.
John, when you look at this quarterback matchup in the game, Tua Tagovailoa before the Oklahoma game said he was 80-85%. He left the game with the ankle that he recently had surgery on over the course of it. Going into this game tonight, who do you trust more at quarterback? Tua Tagovailoa, let's say he's 85%. Mm-hmm. An 85% Tua versus the sensational freshman for Clemson in Trevor Lawrence. Who do you trust more?
You know, Lawrence has been really, really good, and he's clearly going to be a star. Clearly is a star. But I also look at the competition Clemson has faced. And to me, that's the biggest question mark about Clemson tonight. Now, they may be so good that they've been routing their competition for the most part because they're that good. But the ACC, as I said, one-team league. Then they played Notre Dame, and I think they exposed Notre Dame as a team that was 12-0 largely because its schedule fell apart. No fault of their own. No fault of theirs that Florida State was lousy this year, that Southern Cal was lousy this year, that they played Michigan in the first game with a new quarterback when Michigan still wasn't, but we found out late in the season they weren't all that good anyway. But I know Clemson hasn't played anybody as good as Alabama. On the other hand, Tagovailoa has played against a very good Georgia team, against a good Auburn team, against a good LSU team, and against a good Oklahoma team. So I think based on the competition that Tagovailoa has faced, and the fact that he's a year older, sophomore as opposed to a freshman, I would lean towards Tagovailoa. That doesn't mean Alabama wins the game, but you asked me the question, which quarterback would I trust more? And my answer would be Tagovailoa. And I even had to say the name four times, and I still picked him.
John, rarely do I get excited anymore about watching a dunk in a game because I feel like I've seen everything.
I know
that was not the case with Zion Williamson on Saturday against Clemson. That 360 dunk during the game where his head was above the rim was one of the more exciting things I've seen on a basketball court in a while.
The backboard view was tremendous.
Yeah, I actually was watching when that happened. I was flipping back and forth between that game and the Islanders game, partly because I like to watch the Islanders and they're hot right now, but also because there's only so much of Dick Vitale you can take in one night, and I like Dick personally very much. But that was one of those plays that has been replayed probably a million times already and will get a million YouTube views, and we'll still be seeing it a month from now in ESPN promos for Duke's next game, because they televise every one of Duke's games except the ones that are on CBS. But he's a spectacular athlete. There's no doubt about it. He's an extraordinary player. I did wonder. Now, a friend of mine who scouted in the NBA for a long time said to me yesterday, because I brought this up, I said, what if Zion Williamson had been playing in that game for Clemson? And Clemson was on, he's from South Carolina, Clemson was on his list. My friend said to me, John, he was never going to Clemson. He was being recruited by Kentucky, North Carolina, Kansas, and Duke. He was not going to Clemson. It'd be like a great football player from Durham going to Clemson over Duke to play football. Of course he'd go to Clemson. Of course a great basketball player is going to go to Duke or Kentucky or Carolina or Kansas. Now, I'm not knocking Brad Brownell or Clemson. He's built a very solid program. But I understand what my friend was saying. The only thing I'm going to say about Zion Williamson, he's going to be the number one pick in the NBA draft, and I think he's going to have a great career. But another friend of mine, who I won't name because it might get him in trouble if I quote him, but who does a lot of TV and who's very smart, said to me a couple weeks ago, he said, you know, I'm sure Zion Williamson is a very nice young man, and he's obviously a hell of a player, but I hate him. And I said, why? And he said, because it's like he's the only player in college basketball this year. And I understand that. And you're right, Chad, that dunk was amazing, and he makes remarkable plays. But I'd like to hear some talk about Virginia or Tennessee or Gonzaga and the other players on Duke. I watched a promo for that game, the Duke-Clemson game, on a game I was watching, I think, Thursday night. They showed four plays. They were all Zion Williamson dunks. It's as if he's the only player in college basketball, and all he ever does is dunk. He's a better player than that, number one, and there are other players and other teams in the game. I know I sound cynical when I say it, and I am sure he is a very nice young man, but I also understand my friend's sentiment.
You got me thinking with your answer there with Clemson and everything else. Tennessee is a better basketball program historically than Clemson, but Tennessee's also not a blue blood like Duke, Carolina, Kentucky, Kansas,
correct,
that you mentioned. But now Tennessee with Rick Barnes, they've got a five-star player coming in next year. They're recruiting another five-star guy they feel good about right now. It's a 22,000-seat arena. They're selling out every game right now. I know they're number three in the country, and that's why.
Number one in my poll, by the way.
And in a lot of polls, it looks like, too. But yeah. Is that sustainable now for Rick Barnes? Could they, I guess the word would be, elevate themselves, not necessarily as a consistent blue blood, but as a blue blood while Rick Barnes is there?
Sure. Why not, Chad? I mean, look at what Mark Few has done at Gonzaga. I mean, Gonzaga's not Duke or Kentucky or Carolina, but it's a blue blood now, isn't it? I think basketball is a sport where a coach can single-handedly make a program because you only need to recruit half a dozen good to very good players to start a program in the right direction. And if you look at a lot of schools that aren't in that, you know, who are the blue bloods? The constant blue bloods. North Carolina, Kansas, Kentucky, Duke. Is there anybody else you'd put in that league?
No.
No. So there's like four of them. Everybody else is I think, coach-dependent to be very good. And, you know, Tennessee's had some very good teams, as you mentioned. Well, I'm old enough to remember the Ernie and Bernie show years and years ago. And Don DeVoe had a lot of success there. And Bruce Pearl got to an Elite Eight, although we know now that he maybe didn't do it above board all the way. Rick Barnes is that kind of coach. Texas went to the Final Four when Rick Barnes was the coach. I do not believe it had ever gone to the Final Four before or since. So that tells you how good Rick Barnes is. Somebody might correct me on Texas going years and years ago, but I don't think so. Look at what Bob Knight did when he was at Texas Tech. And you know, he put the program in a position that it's now been very consistently solid for most of the last 10 or 15 years. Pat Knight didn't have success, but they've had success since then. Chris Beard, who coached under Pat Knight, is doing very well. So I think, you look at programs in basketball and a great coach, and I think Rick Barnes is a great coach. You guys know I'm biased because he's a friend, but a great coach can make a huge difference in basketball.
We're giving you a chance to win $1,000 four times every weekday. $4K a day means free money for you on 104.5 The Zone.
Midday 180 served up by Wendy's. John Feinstein with us.
You know the Ravens well. You know Harbaugh well. Did you think he was going to turn to Joe Flacco during Lamar Jackson's terrible, terrible struggles during that game yesterday?
It was certainly a topic of discussion in the press box at halftime. I talked to a couple of the Ravens front office guys and asked them what they thought, and they thought it was a real possibility. That Flacco might start the second half, or that they might give Lamar Jackson a series, or see what the Chargers did when they took the second half kick, but that it was a real possibility. And then Harbaugh walked over to Flacco early in the third quarter and kneeled in front of him for, I'd say, 90 seconds or 2 minutes. It was a while. It wasn't just, hey, Joe, hang in there. It was a discussion. And, again, a lot of us thought Flacco was going to go in, but he never made the move. And by the time the fourth quarter started, when Jackson's quarterback rating at that moment in the game was 0.0, the fans were booing like crazy. You know, it's funny how quickly fans forget. They'd forgotten Flacco while Jackson was going 6-1. And then when Jackson was not very good at all, and give credit to the Chargers defense because they adjusted, they put safeties on the field to add speed in place of their linebackers and did a great job. But all of a sudden they're booing and screaming, bring Flacco in. And it never happened, and the Chargers made the mistake of going to a prevent defense, which I call prevent victory, and allowed Jackson to look better in the fourth quarter. But yeah, I was a little surprised. I thought maybe given the fact that they needed to try to throw the ball downfield, and Joe obviously has a stronger arm than Jackson, that they might make the move. I think the flip side was that Harbaugh was thinking, he hasn't played in 2 months. He hasn't taken a snap since November the 4th, and I'm trying to put him in to save a playoff game in the second half against a good defense, maybe not the best move.
This is 4 years running where we've seen at least one team, after a big fight to get into the playoffs, really look like it was out of its depth. Ravens, yeah, and Texans both this weekend. Yeah. Everybody always wants playoffs expanded. To me, the last 4 years, it's looked like playoffs should be shrunk. These teams fight so hard to get in, and then they don't look like they belong.
Yeah, although the flip side is the Eagles had to fight like heck to get in, and they managed to win with the help of Cody Parkey, of course, last night. And Nick Foles, Nick Foles is a guy who almost went to the seminary, but I think he's made a deal with the devil based on what he's done the last 2 years. But I hear what you're saying, Paul. I certainly don't think the playoffs should be expanded. We don't need more mediocre teams getting in, and that's what would happen if you expanded the playoffs. But I do think you can spend yourself getting into postseason. I think the Ravens game came down to the last play of the game, basically, against the Browns, for them to hang on and win last Sunday evening. But the other thing is, I think it's always hard to play a good team twice in a short period of time. And they had played the Chargers 2 weeks ago, and the Chargers clearly adjusted their defense to Lamar Jackson. It was the first time he had seen a team for the second time since he took over at quarterback. And the Texans, I think they just got outplayed by a really hot team. I mean, I think the Colts could walk into Kansas City and win this weekend. I wouldn't be shocked if either road team in the AFC won this weekend. I think they're both good enough. They're both hot. The Chargers had that blip against the Ravens a couple weeks ago, but you know they're 8-1 now on the road, and the Patriots have not looked like the Patriots lately.
John, right now, what's the best story in the league? Is it Phillip Rivers, Drew Brees with what he's done this year, McVay's system, and finally going on playoff display now? Is it the 6-seed Colts? What would you say?
Yeah. You know, I'm going to show my bias, Jonathan. I wrote this morning that it's the Colts. And the reason I think it's the Colts, and the other stories, I mean, if Drew Brees were to win another Super Bowl, great story. What Foles has done, great story. But 14, you know, I know this intimately because I worked with Andrew Luck on my quarterback book. 14 months ago, he wondered if he'd ever play football again, and was as down as he'd ever been in his life, was taking stock of the fact that so much of his identity was tied up in being a football player, and he might not be able to play effectively ever again. He's a quarterback, and he had a shoulder injury that wasn't getting better. And he's made an extraordinary comeback, and the team started 1-5 under Frank Reich. You remember he got seriously questioned for that fourth down play in overtime where they went for it and didn't get it, and that set up the winning field goal for the Texans early in the season. And now they're a team that many people think could go to the Super Bowl, and it's not out of the question, I don't think. So there are a lot of good stories still going here in these playoffs, but if you ask me to pick one, I'm going to pick Luck, and that may be my bias because I like the guy so much.
I didn't even mention Patrick Mahomes in that list.
That's not a bad story either, is it? And they've cooled off a little bit in the last few weeks. We'll see if they can get their mojo back against the Colts. I think that'll be a shootout. I think that's a 38-35 type of game. And Mahomes has been a great story, obviously.
John Feinstein joins us each Monday. John, appreciate it as always. We'll do it again next week.
I will look forward to it, guys. Take care.
Yep, you too.